I just felt like it was a little bit of a kick in the balls, to be honest.
It came a lot sooner than I thought that I would be the oldest player on the team.
That's all you got, brother. That's all you got.
The word of the day would have been hyper-realism.
We're bad at soccer, but we're good on a bagel.
Holding the high line with Rabbi and Red, talking the rapids and turning heads, with questions from you and analysis. In your car, in your home, thank you for tuning to Holding the High Line.
Hello, Colorado Rapids fans. You are listening to Holding the High Line with Rabbi and Red. My name is Matt Pollard. It is Tuesday, May 21st, 2024. Former Rapids MLS Cup champion Gary Smith and Steve Guppy are out at Nashville SC. The MLS Players Association announced the salaries for the spring season of MLS. Jeremy Kelly, former Rapids draft pick, won a game at Wembley, and he and Crawley Town are going up to the English FA League One. And the Rapids lost to RSL after going up 2-0 and then going up 3-2. Because, of course, they did. But I had fun being inside the team bubble for my 34th birthday, and you can listen to that on our most recent episode before this one. I am joined now by my podcast co-host, a man who only thinks about sports, the Torah, and existential dread, as if those all weren't the exact same thing, Rabbi Mark Goodman.
Oh, I wish I could only think about those things. That would be a great livelihood. But unfortunately, life persists and other things happen. Also, I get distracted by stupid stuff, so it's good to see you, Matt. You know, the Premiership wrapped up this week, and nothing really happened. The Bundesliga wrapped up this week, and nothing really happened. And
Bayern never lose, Ken! Mark, right. Okay, right now, question. Do they win? I can't even remember if they're in Europa League or the Europa Conference League. I can't remember who they're playing. Mark, I know we're both rooting for them to be the first Invincibles in UEFA history, but do we think they will achieve it? Yes, no.
Bayern?
Leverkusen.
Leverkusen. Oh,
yes. Bayern never lose, Ken.
Oh, that's what you said. I literally did not understand the words that were coming out of your mouth. Do I think they're going to...
I was speaking German. Of course you weren't.
Is decision day this week? No, it's over, right?
No, but so they still have... They have the cup final in European competition. And so they have not won... They have not lost all comps because I believe they also won the German Cup. Am I remembering that correctly? Bayern Leverkusen.
So let me you know, that's the first time. Thank you for making me aware of that. It's the first I've been aware that they won 28, drew 6, and lost 0 this last year with 65 goal differential. That is lunacy.
They're playing in the Europa League tomorrow, and they're playing Atalanta.
That's right, and it's the final.
Yeah? Yes, it's the final. So, Mark, do we think, are they going undefeated? Are they beating Atalanta to win the Europa League and be the first UEFA team ever to be undefeated all comps?
Personally, I don't think it matters. I mean, I think once you've won the league without losing a game, like, you've basically proven your point. I mean, they're just absolutely stunning, you know. I have to be honest, I think I've only watched one game of theirs this season, and it was, like, way back in, like, October. So, it's been a long, long while. So... They haven't lost a game, according to this, since a friendly against Real Sociedad in July of last year. That's a full calendar year without losing a single game. They haven't lost a meaningful game since they lost to Bochum back in May of last year. 3-0, which is really weird because Bochum aren't even a good team. Wow. By the way, I have no idea if I'm pronouncing Bochum properly. I pronounce it the way I would pronounce in Hebrew.
I don't think there's ever going to be an MLS Invincible, Mark. I think there's too much chaos. There's too much roster limitations. There's too many times that just, like, you know, weirdness happens and then that creates noise as opposed to signal or just chaos. You know, like, eventually the winless San Jose Earthquakes are just going to beat you 3-0 because that's what the MLS Group Riders have for you.
I prefer that, though. I mean, you know, probably it's been a couple months since we talked about that, but... You know, the problem with the Bundesliga, La Liga, and the French League is that in order to be really good in the UEFA Champions League, you have to be, like, unfairly stacked and backed by an entire Middle Eastern country's you know, royal family. So I prefer it. I prefer the parody that way, but you know, that's a whole other topic for a whole other podcast.
Mark, last thing. So as you mentioned, Premier League was relatively chalky. Ironically, or fittingly, all three teams that got promoted from the Championship last year were the three that ended up going down. Everton survived. Nottingham Forest survived as well. There's some uncertainty with who's getting European places. Shout out to Aston Villa, who got into Champions League. That's always fun, Mark, to have, you know, not the usual suspects make it. And then, as you mentioned, you know, before we hit the record button, that, you know, 2 minutes in, Manchester City confirmed who's going to end up winning the table and winning the league. But Rabbi, what did we make of Jurgen Klopp's getting his flowers at the end? I thought it was fitting the way that that Liverpool played. I thought it was fitting that they got a result. Maybe a little bit disappointing that you didn't see Mohamed Salah score. He had a couple of really good opportunities, and then a really nice hug fest that led into a speed. He welcomed formally Arne Slot of my Feyenoord, who's coming over as well. And just it was a very Kloppian day, and it was fitting and very Liverpool and very him. And I think it was a fitting way to show out what has been one of the most significant personalities in English football, if not world football, given not only the way that his teams play, but his character of who he is as a person, and then his thoughts on all of the other things and how he interjects himself from a social dialogue standpoint, which is in line with, I think, holding the Highlines values and also very Liverpudlian.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what's next for Jurgen Klopp. I think it's a really interesting idea to say, you know, I've proven everything I can with this team. There's nothing else that I can prove. I'm tired. I'm burned out. It's time for me to take a break. Because basically, my guess is that he'll take a full calendar year off, and a year from now, he'll wind up with another team. I think the challenge for Jurgen Klopp, the logical one, if I were Jurgen Klopp, would be to captain a national team. The cool thing about being a national team captain is that you're kind of a general manager more so than you are a coach, because you can't like drill them with a specific tactical identity. You have to kind of put your pieces together and cobble your team together, and then, you know, like bring them together really quickly and show them some quick ideas based on the talents and the tendencies they have. That seems like a good next step for Jurgen Klopp. The alternatives are to manage another Champions League level team in another league, which I don't know how much challenge that is after you've already managed in Germany and in the English Premier League. I would assume that the teams that are going to come calling, you know, for the next year are Barcelona and Real Madrid and PSG. You know, I mean, there's some other interesting moves he could do. Like, he could go to the Eredivisie in Holland and try and return one of those kind of storied programs like Ajax to prominence. But that's a little more like that assumes that coaching can get you, you know, can transcend talent and spending, which is, you know, personally, of course, Matt and I would like to see Jurgen Klopp in Major League Soccer.
Yes.
That would be,
yes.
Honestly, on it, I know this is going to sound ridiculous and everyone's like, forget it. You're a homer. You're kind of like pitching the narrative that would most feed this podcast beneficially. And also, Mark, you're being totally selfish. You just want to interview Jurgen Klopp. Like, that's the cool part about being Matt and me, other than like the fun writing that we get to do in the soccer games that we get to go to, is sitting in post game with some of the great coaches and getting to ask questions and being present for that moment and just being like, this is very cool. You know, I got to meet Bob Bradley. That's a highlight of any writer's career. But, you know, meeting Jurgen Klopp would be really fun and talking to him about soccer.
He'd I think be that would so be good in St. Louis, Mark. Like, oh, he literally, it. He'd fit in perfectly
that,
with them.
The German connection. Yeah, I mean, like, that's also a
Red
great...
Red Kids, too? Like, that'd be perfect. Like, working class, middle American, everything, you know, but
that'd be
kind of left-leaning geopolitical. Like, how is St. Louis not the... Right by a river, you know, you've got that connection as well. How
it'd
is
be
Liverpool
a game-breaking move for San Diego, too, but I don't think it's going to happen.
No,
so.
No. Klopp can't be in the sun and everything. I agree with you.
Oh, right. I think it'd be nice. I mean, I think that the whole idea of, like, going to the most... Have you ever been to San Diego, Matt?
Yes.
It's gorgeous.
It's amazing.
there are fewer great cities in America than San Diego. When San Diego started to take off and the population started to zoom, I was like, yeah, I'm really sad that the rest of the country finally figured out that, like, this place is awesome. This place is just fantastic. I mean, imagine a place where the weather's always good and there's just tacos everywhere. I mean, like, that's my vision of heaven. Why I didn't move to San Diego when I had the opportunity, I don't know. But oh,
and
well.
No one hates you geopolitically because you're right next to Los Angeles, so everybody just hates on LA. So, Mark, let's...
When I was a kid, San Diego's only knock was getting there was a pain in the butt because they didn't have a first-rate airport, and it was a two-hour drive from LA. Now it's a three-hour drive from LA, but every airplane goes directly there, so it's good times. So, four-hour drive. It's a nightmare drive. All right, back to... This is not traffic problems in America with Rabbi and Red. This is holding the high line. We're talking soccer.
Mark, this past week, Gary Smith was released from Nashville SC, along with former Rapids assistant Steve Guppy. I've messaged Steve. He's doing okay, given the circumstances. He and I are kind of friends. I've interviewed him once and therefore had his number. This was after a win, which was maybe the only thing that made this kind of curious from a timing standpoint. But results have been kind of down. I don't know if the roster is as good. They hadn't been particularly competitive basically since League's Cup. They weren't super competitive in the regular season last year. They're outside of the playoff spot right now. And basically it's Hani Mukhtar up front in the attack, and he's had some injury issues this year. It's an aging core of midfield that they haven't been able to replenish. They haven't done super great in the draft. They haven't done super great from an academy standpoint. That's never been Gary Smith's MO. Ask any Rapids fan from 2011 to 2007 to 2011 about what he did in the draft, as opposed to let's trade the draft picks for an existing guy who's played in MLS and is a known quantity. And look, you've got a new stadium, you've got a bunch of new fans who want to see a winning team, and you've got an ownership group that's clearly willing to spend. You need to be competitive, and you preferably need to do that by having big stars and playing attractive football, and that is absolutely not Gary Smith's MO. And so I think it was ultimately time, Mark. 7 years, if we're including his time with the USL iteration of Nashville SC, is a long time to be in an individual club. I think a new voice is needed in there, and I think certainly the summer is going to be busy for Nashville. They need to bring in somebody else to help out Hani Mukhtar. We might see a gradual shifting of what's going on at the back defensively. You know, Willis has kind of been up and down for me. I don't know that Daniel Lovitz is as productive. Randall Leal's on a lot of money and does not play regularly for them. I mean, he's not a good enough DP, as much as Rapids fans want to complain about Kevin Cabral. So, I mean, it's a bunch of aging defensive guys who've regressed to their mean, and Hani Mukhtar, who can single-handedly win you some games. I feel bad for Gary. I do think he's still a very good coach, but I think, unfortunately, he's increasingly becoming a dinosaur in American soccer, or at least at the MLS level, in that just tactically he's not what fans necessarily want, or that's going to limit what jobs are available to him. I don't know, Mark, unless you have a superior budget, that playing the way that Gary Smith wants to can win you any more than one trophy one-off in MLS. I don't think it's a path forward to winning the Supporters Shield. I don't think with the new and expanded MLS format for the playoffs that it is a path forward to winning MLS Cup. And so I think that highlights even more for me that 2010 was lightning in the bottle for many of those players, and certainly that coaching staff and the club, Colorado Rapids. But, you know, I just think, you know, could Gary go, Mark, and, you know, could he go get the Chicago Fire job and could say, like, let's, you know, reset defensively, let's do a really good job of being really, really hard to beat, and we're going to play simple but occasionally effective tactics going forward when it comes to an attacking standpoint. But, you know, I don't think Gary Smith is getting another job. I think he can get another job in MLS if he wants to stay in MLS. He could absolutely go back to England and go to League One or the Championship. His style kind of fits in, but I think, unfortunately, Mark, with no relegation, so then there's no risk to not being competitive, or the way in which you go about playing like the smaller team. I don't know that he has a lot of place in terms of teams that are building something longer term that are more aspirational tactically or stylistically in MLS. Ironically, like the Sean Dices and the Big Sams and those types of managers get in because, you know, if you can go about saving a team, then there's a significant financial component to being able to stay up and avoiding relegation, and that then, you know, allows for some of that negative soccer. But there's no benefit to playing ugly on a bad team, Mark, and not winning anything, and that's why Paolo Mascherini has had to evolve in ways that I'm not sure Gary Smith is capable of. So disappointing for him personally, but I think it was time. Mark, your thoughts, or is this just confirmation that Rapids fans should be glad that the Rapids had Gary Smith at the time, and then maybe relieved that they didn't re-sign him, and that the Rapids have gone in different directions as far as their coaching staff?
I mean, I'll take a different opinion, which is that I think Gary Smith is still a capable coach in Major League Soccer, and I think he might get another chance. I mean, Bruce Arena was still getting opportunities down the road. Jason Kreis got multiple opportunities. Paolo Mascherini, I don't necessarily think after he finished with the Rapids had proven that he was a capable MLS manager, but he was given another chance anyways. I think the coaching carousel spins in interesting ways. I mean, I think the interesting about like Robin Fraser was Robin Fraser kind of bops between assistant and head coach. Another example of that is Jay Heaps. Jay Heaps was a head coach, and then he went to being a coach in USL and then being a general manager in USL. So that's kind of like where the coaching carousel can be. The only kind of like it really hasn't worked out for you situation in Major League Soccer is usually going to be the head of a youth club as their coaching director, but like a high-end one, like Scott Gallagher in St. Louis, or Real Colorado in Colorado, the Foxes. So they're like, none of these guys are ever really fully out of it. I think there's definitely a world where Gary Smith is a top level assistant for a very good team. I do want to add that Nashville are, I think, 11th in the table in the Eastern Conference, or maybe they're 10th, and they are one above Atlanta, and Atlanta are currently in the 108th minute of a U.S. Open Cup match against Charleston Battery, where it is 0-0. So if the, you know, we were talking, I think a week ago, the Illuminati in the MLS soccer writing world, like Tom Bogert, Matt Doyle, Jeff Reuter, were kind of talking about how it was the longest stretch in Major League Soccer history where nobody had been fired. I think there's a possibility we'll have a couple firings in the next couple weeks. And I think Atlanta United's head coach is potentially the next one up, because
you think
they have
tomato, Mark? I think if New England doesn't win this weekend, I don't know how you can keep Caleb Porter around.
I mean, that's possible, but I personally don't think that New England were well put together. I don't think their problems had to do with their coaching. I mean, they had some real problems. That's for sure. But they were in bad trouble. But you got Thiago Almada in Atlanta. You've got some really talented players on that team.
That's fair.
Miles Robinson. Like, there's no excuse that they can't get it together. So it's a little perplexing. Your points about Hani Mukhtar were good, that like the whole team behind him is declining and they haven't built the supporting cast to get there. But, you know, it's an interesting conversation. I wonder if our listeners even care, because we've been spending a lot of time on the Eastern Conference, which most of our listeners don't watch. I'll be bluntly honest, and I posted this in my last Holding the Highline Substack article, or it was a side point to this, which is my default position at 7:30 p.m. as the lead-in to a Colorado Rapids game is whoever Miami are playing, because I want to watch Messi. I am that guy. I've bought what MLS is selling me, hook, line, and sinker. That being said, I think I've watched Nashville once. I think I've watched New England once. I think I've watched Atlanta once. So I'm a little informed, but, you know, I'm mostly focused on who are the Rapids playing and what's going on in the Western Conference.
For me, Mark, for the 5:30 time slot, it is which is the more compelling game between who Columbus is playing and who Miami is playing. I'm probably, so far in when I've done that, I'm probably 60-40. Miami versus Columbus. So I've probably done like 13 games in. So I'm probably 8-5 maybe between those two as well. Or if I see that it starts to be a goal fest in the Eastern Conference games, I'll switch over to 360. Kevin Egan's my dude. On that note, Mark, let's move on to Rapids-related stuff. Listeners, this past week, the MLS Players Association, MLSPA, announced the player salaries, so we can look through and we can see that. First of all, Mark, if we are just going off of the actual salaries announced by MLS, which is we'll get to in a minute, do not necessarily show all of the nuance and everything. The Rapids are perfectly mid-table. They are 14th, 15th in MLS in terms of net spend, Mark, and they're at $16.3 million in terms of the amount of money on their roster based on their MLSPA numbers that have been announced. That is up from, I think, 14 point something that we saw last year. I have it in my Burgundy Wave article. I can't see it right now, so maybe I don't have it in my Burgundy Wave article. But in any case, Mark, there is some nuance to be had here. These numbers do not lie, but as multiple MLS executives have told me over the course of the past decade, they don't always tell the full story. Some of that is public, some of that is not public. So one thing that we have, Mark, that is very, very public is the fact that Kevin Cabral right now is on $1.95 million as far as his guaranteed compensation, and roughly half of that is being picked up by the LA Galaxy. So for Rapids fans who think, oh my God, how is it that we're paying $2 million for this guy? Remember that from a Rapids payout standpoint, from how we evaluate him as a player, he's on slightly under $1 million a year. So keep that in mind as well. Other significant ones that we saw, Mark, in terms of guaranteed compensation, Georgi Mihailovic is second on the team. First overall in terms of how much the Rapids are paying him. Kevin Cabral is number one, but remember, he bumps down. So Georgi's on $1.675 million. Rafael Navajo is still right around $1.5 million. Andreas Maxu is on 1.3. Zach Steffen's on 900K. We knew that he was on TAM, Mark, but we didn't know where that number was. We knew that Lamine Diak was on TAM. He's slightly under at 864K. Sam Vines and Cole Bassett back at around 850K. I won't go down the full roster here, listeners. Omir Fernandez, who was signed as a free agent in MLS, is on 636K. Anybody else here significant? Mark, who am I forgetting who might be important while I scroll down this roster? Oh, and Daniel Chacon, who I believe this is his first year on a first-team deal. He's just under 100K as well. And then pretty much there's a bunch of the draft picks and homegrowns and new first-year signings like Remy Cabral with the first team who are all under 100K as well. So that's the roster overall. Mark, it is worth, oh, and then Jasper Lofelson, the number that we have for him is officially the new number for his new deal that he signed with the Rapids, what, a month and a half ago. He's on 255K. He's up from what I assume would have been his original draft contract, which would have been right around 100K. So big things to talk about here, listeners, is that there's a bunch of players who are either on loan from the Rapids or that the Rapids have brought in on loan, and so these numbers might be a little bit different. So Remy Cabral, part of his wages might be getting picked up by Phoenix Rising. I have to imagine as well that Marco Ilić playing for Sarpsborg in Norway, that they're picking up a significant portion of him as well. Miguel Navarro, who's with Talleres in Argentina, I have to imagine most, if not all, of his salary is getting picked up by there. Mark, I'm not as familiar with the finances around the Irish teams and Bose, so maybe the Rapids are picking up all of Abubakar Keita's like 80K or something like that. But so for the players who are on loan, the clubs that they are on loan to may be picking up a portion or all of their salaries, so keep that in mind. Obviously, the two big confusing names that we had on here, listeners, were Sydney Tavares and Sam Nicholson, who are not with the Rapids anymore. I spoke to someone at the club, and so getting some nuances here. So Sydney Tavares was waived. He's officially back with FC Porto B. And then Sam Nicholson and Danny Wilson were waived in January. Danny is not listed on the roster. Sam is. And then there's also Alex Gersbach, who was bought out after January 1st. So the reason why Tavares and why Nicholson are still on here is because of something in the contract or in the way in which the Rapids got them off their roster that necessitated there being some dead cap space. So there's still being some form of monies that the Rapids, as of right now, owe or and are paying to Tavares and to Nicholson. Those numbers aren't necessarily and probably are not their total guaranteed comp for 2024 that the MLSPA put out. Wilson and Gersbach being on there means that there's no more dead money that the Rapids are paying out. Obviously, in order for Gersbach to be bought out, the Rapids had to write a check out of pocket for the entirety of Gersbach's wages for 2024, thus nullifying the contract. Danny, maybe that was all paid out in January or earlier. Maybe there wasn't anything, or that had already been settled in ways that Nicholson and Tavares did not have their contract addressed and paid out in full. So that's led to some dead cap money. It's probably not what those two players were making, which was almost $1 million between the two of them. There's a few other little nuances here, Mark. I'll post the article in Bury New Wave that I posted on that. I don't want to take up any more time on that. Mark, you look at these roster numbers and you think, what haven't I mentioned that you think is important?
Well, you mentioned everything. I just one really minor correction. You probably just misread the line. Abubakar Keita is listed as making $270,313. Oh, so
apologies. Yes, he signed a new deal.
Not a big deal.
The only other two things that I'll say, Mark, in terms of the Rapids, the last couple years or coming out of 2021, Mark, signed some players and then didn't have a really easy out to get out from some of those contracts. One of the things that we really liked in maybe the middle part of Porrick Smith and Fran Taylor's tenure at the club was that they didn't have any bad contracts that they couldn't get out of very easily. We saw a bunch of, you know, pennies on the dollar trades last summer for a Michael Barrios, for a Anthony Markanich, that were basically selling for almost nothing because those guys didn't have a whole lot of value or the contract situations made that a little bit more complicated. If there's really only two contracts that I don't like on here, Mark, let's exclude Kevin Cabral because I think we've all felt the way that we have about him for the better part of a year. But in terms of budget guys, you know, Lal Subhubakar is still on that big pay bump that he got last year at over 700K for not being a starter behind Moise Bombito. I think that's probably too much money. If he was on 400K, I wouldn't be complaining about his contributions to the team. And Jonathan Lewis as well is on 435K, and he's been inconsistent. He's at an age now that you start to wonder what more he can become from a winger standpoint. He hasn't been productive. He's been hurt as well. Lewis is in the last year of this contract that he's under right now, and Abubakar has a team option for 2025. So the club has outs on both of those. The only other contract, Mark, on the books right now that I have concerns about, or that the Rapids don't have an easy out within the next year, would be Kevin Cabral, who is in year four of a five-year deal. So there's no way for the Rapids to get out from under that without buying him out, or waiving him would lead to some dead cap situations. Trading him within the league is probably not a good idea, or you'd get almost nothing in return. You'd probably still have to carry the DP slot as well. So the Rapids aren't getting rid of Kevin Cabral probably for the next 18 months for me, unless they're shelling out $1.8 million in a check, which I do not see happening. Mark, any other big roster things you say?
I didn't get to say anything, Matt.
I'm sorry.
Matt is so excited to talk about this. Matt, this is Matt's football manager moment.
This is an HDHL national holiday, as far as
this is really our favorite thing, and it came out almost right on time for the first time in a long time. The only things that I want to note are one, in past years we've really talked about this as kind of like a shocking or a problematic moment for the Rapids, finding out all these players that we have that we're paying a lot of money for who we're not using or we're overpaying vastly for. That doesn't really exist. The only player that I think people feel like, oh, we're not getting our money's worth out of him, is Kevin Cabral. And as you mentioned, Matt, we've known that for years. You know, when we took his contract on, we knew what it was. And the question was, is it going to be worth what we pay for it? The answer has been overwhelmingly no. So a new contract detail release is not new. The two interesting ones here Jasper Lofelson was a bit of a surprise. He was a little higher than I expected. Lofelson is making $255,833. That's not a lot. It just was a little more than I expected. Lamine Diak was, I think, right about what I would have expected, except that he's not starting. So we're paying a lot for a guy who's sitting on the bench. He's making $864,000. And then the last one that is shocking, but in the other direction, which is it's shockingly low, is Ollie LaRaz, who makes $105,000 to be our starting defensive midfielder and is doing quite well. People have complained, Matt and I have debated, you know, kind of whether he's been good or bad from week to week. He's been, you know, I think overwhelmingly reliable, a little bit kind of dependable in the pass, less dependable in tackling and kind of like positioning. And his dribbling and possession is still a work in progress, although generally I'm very happy with it. I think overwhelmingly judging players based only on their mistakes is only seeing half the story. But for $105,000, there are very few players in Major League Soccer who are kind of at the effective, like, rookie minimum, you know, plus level and are starting every game, and that's Ollie. The crazy thing about that is, according to my notes, Matt, his contract is up at the end of 2024 with a club option for 2025, which I would assume is going to be, you know, a little bit more, another $5,000, another $10,000 for next year.
Pick it up right now.
Oh, my God. Well, that's actually the question. It's a great point, Matt, which is, do you pick up the option assuming that you are buying yourself one whole year of a player at an incredibly cheap price before you have to renew next year at a very high price? Or do you make the deal now and try and hedge that bet and say, listen, you know, we could activate your contract for $110,000 for the year next year, but instead we're going to give you a 3-year deal at $300,000 or $400,000 or $500,000. So I don't know. That'd be my move. So I hope that it all works out the way that it goes well for Ollie.
Mm-hmm. Nothing else that I really have to say as far as roster stuff. As I mentioned, Jason Maxwell probably has tweeted something really intelligent about what's going on there, listeners, so you can check that out. And I will include the link to the article that I posted on Burgundy Wave, which has, you know, my thoughts, a full list of the Rapids as well, just the Rapids, so you don't have to use the filter settings on the MLSPA website, and then also has some of my internal reporting, which I've already shared with you. And we're back, listeners. We just had to take like a 5-minute break there because Mark had to go deal with something for the dog, and normally we would just edit this in and make it look seamless so it looked like we're absolutely perfect, but sometimes we like adding the warts to acknowledge that we are imperfect, and just because we record something and it sounds good doesn't mean that there weren't bloopers or outtakes or anything. Mark, dog update, what happened?
We're perfect. The dog is, my wife went to bed and the dog is still kind of settling into the house, and the dog decided, somehow the dog got my youngest child's favorite sweatshirt, and Etta was in tears and I could tell there was commotion upstairs. So I just kind of cleaned up the mess the dog made. We're in week 4 of pit bull ownership, and, he really hasn't figured out. He was very, very low energy today, and so he's all hyped up at the end of the day. So, anyways, dog ownership is tricky. RSL game, let's talk about it, Matt.
Mark, first, let's talk about chronologically the best game of the week for the Rapids. This past Wednesday, May 15th, 2024, the Colorado Rapids played Vancouver Whitecaps. They won the game 1-0. Mark, it was kind of a nothing game in the first half, and then Cole Bassett and Georgi Mihailovic create a really, really good opportunity. It goes out for a corner. Looks like it would have been a tap-in for Georgi, but Ujvik appeared to make a really, really good play. But then VAR took a look at it, determined that it was denial of a goal-scoring opportunity, penalty awarded to the Rapids, and new rule, Mark, that I was not completely aware of. Shout out to MLS Ref Stats on Twitter for pointing this out. In the laws of the game, while we've gotten rid of double jeopardy from a dog so red card and penalty standpoint, the when the handball would have directly prevented a goal, i.e. the goalkeeper Takaoka was not in position to make the save. So the only thing stopping Georgie's shot from going in and being a goal was the hand. That does not constitute the no longer double jeopardy rule. So Colorado got a penalty, which Rafael Navajo converted, his 4th penalty, 7th goal overall. Now he's on 8 with the RSL goal, I believe. And then also Vancouver was down a man. And basically the second half, Rabbi, was just Colorado cycling through against a team that was playing down a man, and the Rapids playing with their food, because it probably should have been a 2 or a 3-0 scoreline. That's all I really have to say about this game, Rabbi. I don't think there's any, there's no use in us dissecting individual performances, given that the Rapids played up a man for one half. Mark, you are on mute.
Of course I am. It was kind of a nothing burger. we're having a show. It was kind of a nothing burger of a game. I think the Rapids got a goal in, you know, in that penalty situation, that was kind of like hotly contested. And then ultimately just kind of hung in there for the rest of the game. There wasn't a lot in this match. You know, the expected goals for the Rapids was 2.64, and Vancouver only had a 0.67. So there were a lot of opportunities there for Colorado, and they finally kind of like, they ultimately hung on to them. And I think that the reason the expected goals was so high was because they were up a man for almost the entire second half, or for the entire second half. So they're, this one will not be remembered fondly, or not be remembered particularly well, especially since it was a midweek game.
Yeah, the only other thing that I'll say about this game, Mark, is I wonder, is Vancouver in a slump? I know they've kind of been, they were the dark horse darlings of the MLS preseason. And look, we here at HTHL, we rate Ryan Gault, and Brian White, I think, is a very, very good striker. But, you know, they lose to LAFC. And, you know, I was on the Vancouver radio broadcast. They invite me on, and I talked about it, and I said the first 20 minutes were going to be really telling for me, based on where these two teams are form wise based on the loss that both of them suffered over the weekend. It would have been Colorado would have been coming off the 3-2 comeback loss against San Jose Earthquakes that had all of the own goals, that had all of the offside goals that were called off, and then Vancouver was coming off of losing 3-0 to, you know, their absolute bogey team in LAFC. In the first 20 minutes, I thought Vancouver was kind of the better team, but neither team looked really into it. So it was like, okay, this is going to be your, this is going to be your MLS midweek snooze fest, 0-0, 1-1, or somebody nicks it in the end, probably. And then, of course, the sending off and the penalty completely changes the game and to the Rapids' advantage. And the Rapids created that opportunity, which then forced Utvik to making a play into making a play that ultimately cost them the game. But, you know, I have to wonder, Mark, we're looking at, we like looking back in retrospect in terms of where points were dropped and what it meant for the season. And I think in hindsight, that loss to Portland was really bad because of the injuries and because of where Portland is right now. And I think that LAFC win is still going to be really good because where LAFC is going to finish in the table. But I'm wondering if Vancouver's teetering right now. We both like them, Mark. We both probably had them top four. I think, and you know, I could have been talked into them winning the Western Conference, but no doubt they were in a slump. This was a game the Rapids needed to win going into the Rocky Mountain Cup, given what had happened the previous game and given that it was midweek against a Vancouver team. But if Vancouver ends up being kind of meh, or something happens to Ryan Gault or something, maybe this won't be as impressive a win as on paper we would have thought it would have been. In same ways that, you know, maybe that the draw against Seattle is now aging really poorly because maybe they've gone down from a form standpoint, and you had, you know, you were playing a bad team afternoon game and you were up a man, and you missed a penalty. You should have found a way to win that game. So just one comment in the macro. Mark, I don't think a lot of highliners are here for our discussions about the Vancouver Whitecaps game. There's another game that we're talking about. Anything you also want to say about the Caps, or shall we move on to all of our collective trauma from Saturday?
Moving on.
Listeners, this past Saturday, May 18th, the day of my 34th birthday, the Colorado Rapids played Real Salt Lake, and they were up 2-0 because Cole Bassett was good at pressing, and he forced a turnover, and then he passed the ball into the net with Zach McMath out of position, and Rafael Navajo had a great individual play, not giving up the ball, and chipped Zach McMath, former Rapid, and the Rapids were up 2-0, and then they proceeded to crap the bed. Zach Steffen made mistakes. Sam Vines was not particularly good from a defensive standpoint. And the two best players on the pitch were Chicho Arango, who, if it wasn't for Messi, could be in the running for winning MLS MVP, and Andres Gomez, who RSL reportedly bought for $3.8 million and would be the most expensive transfer in Rapids history, and was fantastic on the wing individually, was fantastic in combining with Chicho Arango, and fundamentally, RSL was able to swarm the Rapids. The Rapids, at times, played a little bit too conservatively, played not to lose, or played for winning 3-2, and then played for winning 3-3, drawing 3-3, and then played for only losing 4-3, and ended up losing 5-3. I won't go down all the myriad of chances. You can watch the highlights and everything, and to do so, I think, would obviously be a bit traumatizing for all of you. But so, Arango and Gomez score, and it's tied 2-2 at half. And I said in my game day diary, away day diary, that the Rapids need to raise their level, and they did for the first 11 minutes, and it led to Georgi Mihailovic scoring a goal, and it was a really good transition play. It was great. And then after that, the Rapids played small, and the game plan was small, and as a result, they lost in, Mark, for me, what was possibly the best regular season MLS atmosphere that I have personally experienced. Rabbi, I will throw to you Rabbi's choice. Where are we going? Good thing, bad thing, big thing, or this game was so bonkers that therefore our traditional format is nigh?
I think my big thing, I suppose, is that Cole Bassett is a very important component of this team. I think he was guilty on, I don't remember if it was the third RSL goal, might have been the third RSL goal in the second half, of kind of like olaying on his in his defensive responsibilities. But he's also responsible for that first goal, and he's a big piece of that third goal that the Rapids score from Georgi Mihailovic on the rebound, because Cole's in the box, kind of like involved in that play and in a setting it up kind of way. So that's an interesting thing that, like, I'm starting to get a sense that, like, Cole Bassett is the most dominant player on the Colorado Rapids. How his game goes determines how the rest of the team performs.
Agreed.
To your point about Sam Vines, I think he was kind of absent on the back post on a play, but I don't really blame him in the sense that I think it was RSL's second goal, where
Gomez volley off the corner.
Yeah. That it was a volley. It was an incredible corner volley, and that is a really difficult shot to make. And so Sam should have been a little bit tighter to his man, but realistically, like, you don't really, very few players can finish that goal. So other than that, the last thing I'll say is this. I see your finger up, and then you'll get to go, Matt, don't worry. There was one kind of thing that I was a little bit kind of concerned about. So the change at 71 was Jasper Lofelsen in for Ollie Larraz, Cole Bassett stayed on the field. And then in the 83rd minute, it was Lawless Abubakar for Georgi Mihailovic. And I do wonder whether those two changes were the right change. Now, this is some serious Monday morning quarterbacking, folks. But the question that I might ask is, I think that maybe Lofelsen should have come in for Bassett, because defensively, Larraz, I think, is a little bit more solid. And whether Georgi Mihailovic is able to maintain possession better, rather than putting Lalas Abubakar in and effectively going to a three-man back line or a five-man back line. That was a little bit of a defensive look that I'm not sure was the right way to go. Am I sure about this? No. It's very easy to kind of second guess the manager after the fact, but that's kind of like where I'm thinking. But I do think, to be honest, that this was the Rapids and Salt Lake having a standard Rocky Mountain Cup where these two teams are mostly vibes. This was, I think, as you said it really well, Matt, this is Arango and Gomez just absolutely lighting it up and just being fantastic and showing off that they are excellent players. You know, yes, Colorado should have defended better. I would have been fine if we'd gotten out of Sandy 3-3. Losing 4-3 was disappointing. We really lost 5-3, obviously, but like, I definitely felt like Salt Lake was putting a lot of pressure on Colorado, and they were at home, and this was as much a talented and dominant performance by Salt Lake as much as it was a defensive failure by the Rapids in the second half.
I wouldn't even say so much that it was a defensive failure, Mark. It was a composure thing. You know, like, as soon as RSL got going, even before I saw that first goal by Arango, I saw that one coming. Not even from the standpoint of the shot coming in and Stefan fumbling the bag necessarily, but just the second goal. So the Gomez goal to make it 2-2 was a fantastic individual play. But there were so many other things, Mark, that I think were ultimately about composure, more so than like actual technical quality ability. So let's highlight some individuals here, Mark. First of all, agree with everything that you said about Cole Bassett. I thought he was good. Rafael Navajo scoring another really good goal, and a goal that was mostly his individual effort. And I think he had to work really, really hard in a difficult matchup from a center back standpoint without a whole lot of support in hold up play in possession. I do think Navajo had appropriate support when it came to what the Rapids were trying to do in transition, and that was effective. We saw that on the third goal, and it was also effective from a pressing standpoint. We saw that on the first goal that was mostly Bassett, but Navajo was in a position that took away a pass that then forced the turnover, and RSL's building out of the back. They have their goalkeeper in a position, assuming that they're going to be able to hold on to the ball. That takes McMath out from being directly in a direct line of sight between Bassett, the ball, and the goal in order for Bassett to effectively pass the ball, albeit a 40-yard pass, a 30-yard pass, into the back of the net. So Bassett good, Navajo good. Other good thing that I will say, Mark, is that if nothing else, no matter how bad this game is going to be, RSL was never going to get more than 3 points in this game. So worst case scenario for the Rocky Mountain Cup purpose was always back on July 19th, July 20th, I think it is, for the final league game before the break for Leagues Cup. The Rapids host the third leg, and you know, if you win the game, you win the cup. Jason Maxwell did a really good job of correcting me on Twitter on the tiebreaker here. So the first determination for the Rocky Mountain Cup listeners is points in the series. So it's not just the aggregate scoreline across all of the games in which it is played. But so because RSL now has the goal difference advantage of plus two, they have that tiebreaker, and then also they have the tiebreaker. The next tiebreaker is who has won it previously. So as soon as RSL made it 4-3 and was going to win the game at least by 4-3, the Rapids were always going to need to win that third leg. If the Rapids had drawn it, then potentially RSL could win it, and then goal difference would have been a factor for the purposes of the third leg. But so there was no scenario here where the Rapids got shelled and could have some other tiebreaker. The Rapids need to win that third leg back at Dick's Sporting Goods Park in late July. And if they don't, RSL wins the cup. RSL draw, RSL win, RSL wins the cup again. The only real I want to highlight some individual stakes, Mark, because I think it speaks to the bigger picture. And I'll get to a Keegan Rosenberry quote, which we did feature on the last episode, that I think is really instructive for listeners. Bombito with that really bad back pass, Mark, that's maybe at most two or three defensive mistakes that we've seen from him this year, where it's a case of like him getting the yips that we saw regularly at times last year that we saw here. And for the most part, it's come in big moments, either that are significant in terms of the game or in from an atmosphere standpoint. The opponent is having the fun from the run of play. The defense feels like they're under a siege mentality, and the crowd is really into it. And so that back pass that Bombito had that set up, I think it was Anderson Julio for the breakaway that Stefan came off his line in order to shut down, was a really bad sequence. But Bombito's not who I'm upset with in this play or in this game, Mark. Stefan needs to collect the ball after that first shot in from distance. He sees it coming. Yes, it's hit with pace. Like, knock it down, fine if you can't catch it initially, but then pounce on it afterwards. And similarly, there were two other goals where the ball kind of screams past him and he could have done something with. I can forgive the Andres Gomez screamer on the second goal, but then I think it was the tie-breaking goal that was scored by Arango off of the corner. Stefan had an opportunity to tip that over the bar. It ends up going off the crossbar, so Stefan could have gotten to it first to save it. He could have tipped it over the bar out for another corner, live to fight another day, or he could have gotten to the rebound before Chicho Arango gets to it. Mark, Stefan was bad, and Rabbi, did you see the Twitter thread that we had off of an Ask HTHL? I'll bring it up now, but there was a question about Stefan's underlying numbers and whether or not he's been good. And from an eye test standpoint, there's been a lot of games where he appears to make good saves or make saves that Rapids goalkeepers last year would not have made. Mark, do you want to guess where Zach Stefan is in terms of post-save expected goals? And then that with a and then where his like expected saves versus actual saves are at, or his expected goals versus actual goals conceded are at.
I thought he did great in this match, and all the goals that went in were, but I know that the expected goals was like 2.64, and so he was, by that math, he's supposed to have saved some of those.
So he's currently last in MLS, Mark, in terms of the entire season, cumulatively, in terms of post-shot goals or expected goals against. He is -5.9. So what does that mean, listeners? That means if we were to put in an average goalkeeper from that stat standpoint, they would have saved almost 6 more goals than Stefan has given up. I will say, Mark, that most of those have come in bad bunches. So the Portland game was really bad. He's conceded 4. I think he had 1.4 XG in that one. And then the San Jose one was really bad. And then to your point, the RSL one, the Rapids give up 5. They should have only given up like 2. So when Stefan's bad, it's when Stefan's himself normally, or when he's average, he's fine. When he's great, he's great. And when he's bad, he's really bad. And I would say, Mark, when this team is really bad, they're really bad. So from that, whichever was the most recent goal the Rapids scored, whether or not it was offside against San Jose, everything after that was terrible because they conceded 3 goals in, what, 45 minutes plus stoppage time. First game of the season against Portland, really, really bad. This game against RSL, after going up 2-0 20 minutes in, really, really bad. And Stefan was very bad in those. If we're bringing back the like season one of HTHL, Mark, the Lawless Abubakar blame pie, I don't think there's any question on the second and on the fourth goal, on the second and the third goal, Stefan deserves the biggest slice of the blame pie. Sam Vines, as we talked about, Mark, he's the one marking Andres Gomez on the goal off of the corner, and he doesn't do a good job of closing it down. Yes, it's a great finish, but get in his face, force him to not be able to take that volley, or force him to volley it like into your stomach and then go out for a corner or whatever. And then I'll disagree with you, Mark, from the run of play standpoint, because Vines is the one who gets played around in the 1-2 between Arango and Gomez for the fourth goal to ultimately score the winner. I'm not going to forgive the fifth goal, but at that point, the Rapids were always going to lose the game, and like the game was stretched anyways, so that was always going to be a chaotic moment. But to your point, Rabbi, Cole Bassett and Jasper Lofelson both caught upfield, and that's not the first time the double pivot has been upfield in a transition play to then isolate and expose Moise Bombito in a way that's unfair to him. But then you also had on top of that, Mark, I don't know if you saw with the wide shot replay as well, Keegan Rosenberry ultimately takes a he makes a run back to try and get to Anderson Julio and actually place him onside. Whereas if he had held up on the run, Julio's offside by a mile, and then that goal never actually happens. But I think at that point, defensive composure or defensive organization wasn't really the issue. The game had already been lost, and the plot had already been lost in that regard. Keegan had a really good answer, Mark, in terms of how the Rapids were trying to deal with that. And so I'll read the full quote out here. Quote, "The challenge is trying to decipher the black and white of when going after a team and pressing them and sitting back in a mid block. It's in those moments where we get stretched a little bit. Either our forwards get drawn out, or it's a chain reaction where one after another, we're slightly late. There's moments where we're trying. There are moments we're trying to get better at that. It's on to us as a team in a loud stadium trying to communicate to each other. Maybe this isn't the time to go. We should pull everybody back, get compact and reset. We talk about resetting a lot. Those are usually the moments that cause us problems. It's preventable. We can control those moments. The goal in this sport is to think collectively and all think the exact same thing at the exact same time. As you can imagine, it's a real challenge." And so, Mark, I have this question or this concern I have around the team and what they're trying to do tactically and what Chris Armas is trying to do. And obviously it's a work in progress. There's a lot of new players, but I haven't diagnosed where the actual root cause of this problem is, because we're 13 games into the season. We're more than a third of the way through the year. A lot of this stuff should be dealt with. Is Chris Armas, does he have too many different things that he's trying to have the team be good at? Because he's not turning the Rapids into Red Bull Colorado, that they're stuck in terms of both of those different modes. Because we've seen first 20 minutes of the game, they're pressing them, they're going after RSL, they're turning the ball over, they're creating goals off of those turnovers, but they switch to the back five, or even before Lawless Abubakar comes on for Georgi Mihailovic because he couldn't go anymore because of the heel injury re-aggravating, or bothering him, I should say, rather. He didn't re-injure it, to my knowledge. That in that moment, they don't have a good understanding of, they have too many different ways, Mark, that they go about going with their rest defense, that they're confused in terms of what their setup should be, or transitioning between those is difficult. And does that come down to phases of play? Does that come down to communication? Is Chris Armas overloading with them, overloading them with information and they're not able to process and execute it? Is he not giving them enough information to where then they're not fully prepared? I haven't figured out what that answer is, but when the Rapids have been bad, that's been the root cause of it. And that's something that has to get better, which then brings me, Mark, to the second point that I have of, again, I think we saw a game where Armas in the second half did not anticipate what was happening and did not make the right change and or a change quick enough in order to try and counteract that. And I didn't understand the back five bringing on Wallace Abubakar. I don't know what other sub that you make in there, Mark. Maybe you throw on one of the other kids, but you know, you can see after that third goal is scored that you're up for, you know, 10 minutes plus stoppage time of absolute Mormon hell. And so just to bring on Kevin Cabral, where I don't think that he's a great substitute player, to bring on Darren Yapi, who is not goal dangerous and is absolutely going to be a deer in the headlights from a pressing and a chance creation standpoint, I don't get that substitution either. Lofelson, okay, fine, I can understand that, even though I kind of agree with what you said about the way that that substitution happened, Mark, and issues that we have with that as well. But other than that, the only other second half sub, Mark, that I could really agree with is Connor Ronan, because he's a veteran, he's played in this derby before, and he's fresh. He's going to be able to move around in the midfield, and he's going to calm things down possession wise when they win the ball back in order to relieve some of that pressure. And just as soon as that third goal came in, the Rapids didn't stop taking on water. And for Armas to then make substitutions that, for me, I think played into that rather than trying to counteract that, I'm not sure about that one. You know, you could have brought in Jonathan Lewis to stretch the game. I think that would have been better than Kevin Cabral for me. You could have gone. You could have gone with Jackson Travis in a wide position or Sebastian Anderson in order to try and stretch the field or something as well. I didn't get it in that regard, Mark. And it was another game that I disagreed with Armas's approach in the second half that ultimately the coaching staff wasn't able to help turn the tide once the tide had turned. We could say that about San Jose. Go ahead, Mark.
Oh, I was just going to say really quick, there's some problems with midfield control. You know, a lot of things happened in the final thirds for both teams. So neither team did a great job of like mucking up the game and making it hard. It's funny to watch a 5-3 game like this and be like, wow, end to end action. This is so much fun. And then watch a nil nil kind of like a snoozer. And by snoozer, I mean like both teams playing very tight possession, very strong defensively. And see the differences between those two matches and the way that you approach it. The one little addition that I wanted to add here is, RSL had 12 shots in the box on the Rapids and converted 4 of them, right? That's a lot. That is a lot of shots in the box.
Yep.
So you have to not only prevent, that's not just middle third defense and middle third mucking up in possession. That is also like kind of like forming that line of in the sand at the 18-yard box where you say, we're going to make it really hard for you to get inside the box for your shots, right? And there wasn't a lot of that. If you go back and watch the goals, if you go back and watch a lot of the game, the Rapids didn't really kind of pack their end. They were kind of a little bit spread out defensively throughout the final third, and they weren't necessarily tight to their man or cutting off lanes. And so that's something they're going to be working on this week in practice.
The last thing I'll say, Mark, is that if you listen to some of the post-game audio, you know, it was me and Braden Norris and Connor Cape were the only ones who were in post-game. Obviously, Connor Cape and I were there in person. I don't know if you know this, Mark, but actually I was in the bubble with the team. I got to travel on the team charters and everything and got to participate and look at all of that and cover the team inside. You should totally check that out, Rabbi, on the most recent episode of Holding the High Line once you finish
cannot
this
wait.
One. But so Braden was on the call as well, and we were asking kind of, you know, really inquisitive questions there, Mark. And Armas had his first real press conference where I thought he came out, and it wasn't coach speak is the wrong word, but he defended his players and maybe said some things that I think otherwise, like, you know, the fans would think were absolutely off base, if not flat out lies. It was clear to me, Mark, that this was a press conference where Armas felt he needed to speak to his players. But, you know, he said things like, you know, I see a bunch of winners. I see a bunch of champions. And here, let me pull up the quote since I think I had it. We didn't lift a trophy tonight, but our guys played like champions. We said we were going to come after it and go for it. They set the tone. Good response at halftime. I'm really proud of the team. Those behaviors have to come before we lift a trophy. I saw a bunch of winners out there tonight. I'm really proud of the team. Mark, what is he talking about? Like, you can't say that you're a champion. You can't say that you're a winner when you were up 2-0 and you ended up losing the game 5-3. Are there underlying tendencies that are a precursor to being a winner, to being a champion, to winning these games, to winning trophies that the team absolutely is working on? That is, a lot of that is behind the scene, and we don't necessarily see that, or we haven't seen that come to full fruition on the field in a 90-minute game against a very, very good team. Can I see that? Absolutely. But I just, Mark, you and I both attended press conferences where Pablo would talk almost philosophical nonsense out of refusal to directly address the deep underlying issues that were obvious to everyone on the team. We saw Anthony Hudson do similar things, and we saw Robin Fraser be very confrontational or push back on things that appeared obvious to us that he disagreed with, or at least publicly refused to acknowledge as well. And so this is really the first game where I really kind of felt that, to where I could completely understand if there's a C38 member who's had a few, too many beers, who gets invited into that press room from the, the upper deck seats that they were in at the riot. And, for them to immediately say, like, Chris, like, WTF, like, how can you say that? How can you say that you saw a group that was a bunch of champions when they lost a derby game? And we've seen this every single time before. And they got scared by the moment. They got spooked. They didn't have their composure. They weren't able to regain any control from the game, and fundamentally they collapsed after a really, really great start, and they weren't able to hold on, and they played defensive small soccer, had a siege mentality, and then ultimately it wasn't good enough. They weren't able to hold it out, and fundamentally they collapsed. I understand he's speaking to the team. DNVR Mark reported that they had a really candid and positive meeting on it on Monday, so yesterday at time recording, about what happened and how they were going to address it. And we have seen this team absolutely be able to reset and set the tone between games, going from the loss to Cincinnati to the game that they won after that I can't remember because these all start to bleed together. We see them go from losing the San Jose game to finding a way and controlling the second half, albeit without that reflecting in the scoreline because they only won that game 1-0. So absolutely, I can see that this is a fantastic learning moment that the Rapids are going to carry over to the Death Loons on Saturday, and they are absolutely, that this is a game that is going to sting and be a point of motivation and a point of learning for the second leg in July. But my bad thing from there was that. Mark, anything that you want to say about that? I've got two final thoughts on the RMC.
Nope. I think we've covered this game very extensively.
Mark, this was the first Rocky Mountain Cup game ever that had more than 6 goals scored, an 8-goal thriller. So in that regard, I think it's an instant classic. Anytime that you've got 8 goals scored, as long as it's not like 8-0 or 7-1, I think you can say is a, if not a competitive game, a classic game, or one that will live long in the memory, certainly more than your 0-0 or 1-0 scoreline that you've talked about as well, Mark. And then I did feature audio from, I was able to sit in for the tail end of the RSL press conference that they had with Pablo Mascherini, and the RSL comms person immediately recognized me, asked if I wanted a question. I had one. And so I followed up, Mark, on the narrative that we have around Pablo Mascherini and his role within this rivalry, who he is from a Rapids standpoint, and how Rapids fans see him potentially as a traitor, how RSL fans are happy with the success that the club has had under him, but are still kind of queasy in terms of his long-term legacy. And you can listen to the audio that he had with that. He very dismissively shook his head, Mark, but his answer for me was respectful. It was dismissive of the notion of it, but his answer was respectful because he knew where I was coming from, and also the relationship that Pablo and I have had, which is, going on almost a decade now at this point. But I think fundamentally, Mark, like I think it's his fourth season as RSL head coach, if we're including the interim as one of those four. And so at this point, every single RSL fan has had enough time to figure out how they feel about him. Have they forgiven him, or are they at peace with who he was as a Rapids player and a Rapids manager? Are they accepting of him, or is this queasy kind of a, you're not my real dad, but also it's kind of fun because you're buying me ice cream regularly, and therefore I'm going to accept it as long as that continues? And Rapids fans certainly have had plenty of time to think about him as well. And so some Rapids fans are able to have that nuanced view of celebrating and liking him for what he did for the Rapids in the past, and then also hating him currently now as a person, or disliking or rooting against him, given that he's coaching for a rival. There are some Rapids fans who immediately, as soon as he took any job with RSL, saw him as a traitor, and he is irredeemable. There are some Rapids fans who the only way for him to redeem himself is to come home to Commerce City and be a part of new success with the Rapids. And there are some people, Mark, who are capable of compartmentalizing Pablo, the Rapids player, Pablo, the Rapids head coach, some success ultimately ended in failure, and then Pablo, now the RSL head coach, and separating that as well, for me at least, as someone who knows him, from Pablo Mastroianni, the human being, the philosopher, the cosmic entity, the cosmic thinker that is Pablo Mastroianni. And so at this point, you know, Mark, it's like Donald Trump. Like, he's been around long enough to, how are you not undecided about Donald Trump? You made up your mind whether or not you like him or you hate him and what all of that looks like. And so enough time has passed to where I think everyone in both fan bases, or anyone who pays attention to the Rocky Mountain Cup, knows how they feel about him. And I don't think any of that is going to change, Mark. The only people there, I think, are the RSL fans waiting for him to win a trophy, and then maybe they'll slightly move the how they feel about him, you know, one little bit on the scale there. And Rapids fans, I think, would be, I think it would only be negative for him to win a trophy and with RSL. And the only way for him to get into any more good graces with Rapids fans would again be to come home. And I don't see a path forward for that happening as long as Porrick Smith is still at the organization in a position of power. And the fact that Pablo is able to decouple that, or not remove himself from that dialogue and from caring about that and just focusing on what's in front of him, speaks to who he is as a person. And that's why, at least for me, Mark, I can't hate him, and I just further respect him. And I look forward to covering him as he continues to be a part of the story in this Rocky Mountain Cup narrative and rivalry. Mark, tell our listeners how they can best support Holding the High Line, even though I just admitted that secretly I'm an RSL shill and I love Pablo Mastroianni and I've been simping him this whole time.
I don't think that's what you just said. Listeners, you can support our podcast by becoming a free follow on our Substack. That is, you go to holdingthehighline.substack.com and you click the subscribe button. That's really great for us. We love for you to read our material and all that stuff. Go to Facebook, become a follower of Holding the High Line. Check out my posts on Reddit, and also check out Matt's written content over at Burgundy Wave, which is also a great way to kind of, in an unpaid way, support the podcast. You can also like and subscribe and review us on any of the podcatchers that you like. I'm an Apple podcast kind of guy, but if you catch us on Spotify or anywhere else, review it and like it, and that is good for us. And then, of course, if you'd like to kick it up a notch and become a paid Highliner, you can join the team by becoming what we call a Highliner. $48 a year, $5 a month, $96 at the Gallery of Honor rate. We really appreciate our Highliners. We send out a t-shirt to everyone. We still have a bunch of the black shirts in large. We still have a bunch of the camo gray in all kinds of sizes. And anyone who subscribes by the end of the year will be getting one of our pieces of Holding the High Line merch with our really cool crest on it. We appreciate you. You help us to do the important work of supporter reportering, and it's really greatly appreciated. So thanks for all the things that you all do to support us, especially put up with me when I have to deal with the dog in the middle of the podcast. Back to you, Matt.
Listeners, this coming Saturday, May 25th, the Colorado Rapids are back at the Richard in Commerce City, Colorado, to take on Minnesota United, the Loons. Vancouver, where is Vancouver in the table, Mark? Vancouver is second in the Western Conference. The Hits don't stop coming for the Burgundy Boys. In May, they have 24 points off of 12 games played, a record of 7-2-1. And away from home this year, the Loons are 4-1-0. They are road warriors, absolutely, and they have a goal difference of +7. Colorado, with the loss over the weekend, falls to 6th in the Western Conference. They have 21 points off of 14 games played, a record of 6-5-3. Goal difference is down to +1, but they still have a really good home record of 3-2-1. Mark, normally when we bring up Minnesota United, we'd be talking about Emmanuel Reynoso, but we could do a whole podcast on just his saga. Last I've seen, Mark, I think he's back in Minnesota and somehow trying to convince Minnesota United to take him seriously, even though he didn't show up for preseason and he missed a green card appointment back in Argentina and he missed flights back in Argentina. And Jaime Ojeda on Twitter, Mark, who is a all of his stuff is in Spanish and I can't tell where his actual outlet is. But in any case, at Jaime OR96, he's reporting that he saw Emmanuel Reynoso showed somebody a video from his phone, and it shows somebody holding a huge stack of money and a gun. And this was reportedly back the last time that Emmanuel Reynoso was in Argentina. So, Mark, he has this would be a normal occurrence if Emmanuel Reynoso was an NFL player, probably for the Oakland Raiders. But I don't know what's going on with him. I do not anticipate him playing with his team. But Mark, nonetheless, Cameron Knowles has done a fantastic job with all of the noise outside with Minnesota United. Dane St. Clair is still in goal for them, the Canadian goalkeeper. He's mid for me. Mark, Michael Boxall is captain and one of their longtime center backs that they have. Former Rapids target and once almost Colorado Rapids signee from last summer, Caden Clark is with Minnesota United, and he's playing outside back, Mark. He has started 5 games and played 429 minutes and not had his return to MLS that maybe he would have expected. Will Trapp is still doing his thing in midfield, 1L, 2Ts in Will Trapp. Franco Fragapane has taken over the midfield number 10 role, and he's normally been the Batman to Emmanuel Reynoso's Robin. One other Robin that you have on the team is Robin Lud, who is leading the team in assists. He has 9 assists and 4 goals, the leading goal scorer for Minnesota, despite being mostly a bench player, has been Tani Oluwaseye. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly. He's got 5 goals in 442 minutes on only 4 starts. He's been playing somewhat out wide. And then Timo Pukki, Mark, for people who pay attention to Norwich City, will recognize him. Timo, I believe, scored a goal in this reverse fixture, Mark. That was part of that, the final 3 games for Robin Fraser, that 3-game road stretch to mark the restart of league play after Leagues Cup. Honey Bowanga, Mark, is still a really, really fun outside wide player. I don't know that there's a good Rapids or a good historic. Maybe Deshaun Brown plus, if we're going back a decade in the case of the Rapids. But this is the balanced team, Mark. This is a team that is doing it by committee. And this is a team that has almost rallied around that they what has united them as a team has been the mutual disdain of their teammate and their talisman, Emmanuel Reynoso. Oh, and I should point out as well, Rabbi, former Colorado Rapids goalkeeper Clint Irwin is on the bench normally as the backup goalkeeper for the Loons.
5 games in a row without a loss. Emmanuel Reynoso, according to Tom Bogert, linked with Club Tijuana, despite all the chaos going on with him, hasn't really seemed to bother them. They've beaten good teams. They beat Atlanta United, drew LA Galaxy, beat Sporting Kansas City, who have been putting together a pretty solid season, and thumped Portland 2-1, the same Portland that beat the Rapids 4-1 the first week of the season. So I don't really understand Minnesota. I don't really understand how they're getting it done.
Nope.
You mentioned all of those players. They're playing, we've said these kinds of things before, but they're playing as the greater than the sum of their parts. So that's kind of cool. Will Trapp hasn't been a dominant defensive midfielder, string puller, regista type player in MLS in the last couple of years. He's been kind of like steadily on the decline, but he seems to be holding this team together very well. Frangipane and Bongi Halongwe are, Halongwe is on his way up and is a really talented player. Just a kind of a a pacey winger who kind of like puts that ball on his foot and glides forward into dangerous positions. He's more of the possession based guy than someone who's going to sling in the ball at the right moment. So that's just something to note that, you know, they're not a team that's kind of like focused on kind of coming in with crosses. They are really present at like facing up with you. Mm-hmm. I think also they're less likely to go down the wings than they are to try and work it into the middle and take shots from the top of the box. So those are things that work to Minnesota's advantage. This should be a good game. These are two very good teams in MLS who've been really performing at a high rate. This game is ultimately going to be, you know, the number two team in the league versus the number six team in the West in the conference. And so these are right now. This is a playoff preview type match. Where are we going to be another 12 weeks from now? Who knows? You know, this is a good game. By the way, Minnesota, going all the way back to their entry into the league, Minnesota Rapids games have been very, very good matches. They've been very fun to watch. They've been highly enjoyable, highly entertaining. I highly, you know, if you don't tune into every Rapids match, which I totally get, life happens. This one is, I wouldn't say appointment viewing, but this one is definitely worth watching or worth watching on review, he said ominously, not knowing whether this game was going to ultimately turn out to be a nil-nil snooze fest. Yeah, my prediction for this match is that the Rapids and Minnesota come out to a 2-2 draw.
I had a 1-1 draw on this one, Mark. To your point, Rabbi, these games have been eventful, or certainly they've been climactic. So, for example, I recall, do you remember, Mark, it was, I believe this was the original Danny Wilson, the Scottish Salmon, again, came against Minnesota United. I believe it was in 2021, and the Rapids were down 2-0 in the first half, and they came back and won that one. You remember the Danny Wilson red card at Minnesota United, and the Rapids came back to win that one. Lucas Estevez scored a goal, I think, in transition, and the Rapids, you know, had a comeback despite losing and being down a man. At the same time, Mark, we've also seen these two teams meet in the playoffs, and Minnesota absolutely trounced the Pids 3-0 in this one. So now, granted, all of that was with the context of normally the person doing that to the Colorado Rapids was Emmanuel Reynoso, and then in previous years, Kevin Molino. And obviously, there's no Kevin Molino here, and I do not see Emmanuel Reynoso repairing the massive, terrible reputation bridge burning that he's done so far. I don't think he repairs that over the course of the next 5 days. But to your point, Mark, I think it's two teams that play with a collective. It's two teams that aspire to do some good stuff with the ball, and two teams that ultimately rely on being compact and being able to put out fires, but also prevent fires. Normally, Mark, for a game, you know, against a number two team in the Western Conference, like we did with the RSL game, we would talk about, you know, tactically what's going on or who's there really to kind of beat. That works for cases where you look at how RSL has tried to play in the midfield without Pablo Ruiz, or certainly as we talked about Andres Gomez and Chicho Arango. There's no one star, obviously, without Reynoso for us to talk about. I don't know that style makes this game, Mark, just given what happened over the weekend. I think this game for the Rapids is entirely about them focusing on themselves and doing what they do well, or getting back to doing that, rather than thinking, let's build the best game plan for neutralizing Minnesota. We have to come out and play to the best of our abilities based on our principles and our philosophy and mentality about the game. If the Rapids are able to bounce back like they did against Cincinnati, like they did against San Jose, I think we'll see a much improved performance. I think we'll see a much more focused team. The big thing for me, Mark, given that Minnesota has, I just had their record up 4-1 and something. I think they're 4-1-1. Minnesota's very good on the road, and Minnesota goes after teams on the road in ways that normally you would not expect somebody coming at altitude to play a little bit more conservative, like how Vancouver did, like how San Jose to a certain extent did, or at least in the first half did. So if there's one thing that absolutely the Rapids have to take from the RSL game and absolutely correct immediately, it's the anytime the game state is changed by a goal, the Rapids cannot change what they're doing. They can't let off if they take a lead. And if Minnesota starts to put it on them and the Rapids get a little bit scared that they're going to go from winning the game to tied, or if the game is tied, they're concerned about losing the game. They cannot play small. They can't shrink. I don't want to see a back five. I don't want to see the team collapse defensively or anything. You can't play not to lose. RSL was playing to come back to win the game twice on Saturday. The Rapids were playing twice to not give up a lead, and the Rapids did that. So absolutely, the Rapids have to play. We have to see a consistent 90-minute performance from them, and we have to see the Rapids aspire to control and dictate the pace of game and control the match in ways that the Rapids only did at times previously. And if they do that, they can get a result. Mark, you've got 2-2. Who's your goal scorer?
Well, Rafael Navajo is one because I have him captained on my fantasy team, which is never advice to any of you who play fantasy because I'm terrible at it. By the way, fun fact, Robin Lode is in the top 20 in MLS for fantasy points per dollar or whatever. So he's one of the most efficient players in the league. I guess my other person would probably be... interesting question. Let's get Ali Larraz that goal. Is he going to get a goal this week? Does he have one this year? He has one, right? No, he didn't have one. Maybe he had one.
I think he has an assist. He has an assist.
Oh, he had an assist. That's right. Nice. So let's give it to Ali Larraz.
Okay, then. Mark, so I'll take... Navajo's feeling himself, and he's doing good stuff regardless of what happens around him. And Minnesota did have a red card at the back, so I'm concerned about their center back matchup. If Navajo can get separation on Boxel, and I think he will, I think Navajo is able to score a goal. And I don't know who to pick for a goal scorer, honestly, Mark, because they're so balanced in terms of who's scoring. But I'll give you my guarantee will be that Robin Ludd gets the primary assist on that goal as well. So that'll be a 1-1 draw. Rabbi, anything else? Shall we get out of here?
That's all I got, Matt.
Listeners, you can follow us individually or collectively on Twitter at @soccer_rabbi, at @LWSMattPollard, and at @Rapids96Podcast. Send us your questions using the hashtag AskHTHL, or if you want to send us something in long form, get in touch with us further, you can email us at Rapids96Podcast@gmail.com. As Rabbi said, head over to our Substack. That's where you'll find his written work, holdingthehighline.substack.com. That's also where you can support us financially. Most of my Rapids written work will be found at burgundywave.com. Rate, review, share, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and tell other Rapids soccer curious people in your life about us and about the Rapids as well. I know Judgmental Jim had some friends over as well. Mark, Rabbi, the friends at work have found out that I am a soccer person and asked me about the Rapids, and I'm hesitant to tell them about this podcast because I want this to be a space where we can kind of go off and share things that other people in other parts of my life don't necessarily hear. So I'm not subconscious about that, but I will see about whether or not they're interested in going to a Rapids game. And while I won't be joining them in the stands, obviously, I think I can coax them there if I agree to pay for their tailgate ticket as well. They're $12 to eat and drink and have all the dev dogs and everything. So pay attention to that, listeners. We've had some feedback about how we aren't necessarily getting we aren't getting the word out about us as well, and you can help spread us and spread all of the good burgundy and blue stuff we're doing here at HTHL. Listeners, we'll see you next week. Check out my episode of my vlog diary, my voice diary over the weekend if you haven't already. We'll speak to you after when it gets Minnesota. Courage.
Peace.